From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's time for the Outdoor Connection, brought to you by TJ and the crew from the Minnow Bucket in North Platte. The Minnow Bucket, for all your hunting, fishing, and outdoor needs. Stop in today at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte. Here's your host of Husker Radio's Outdoor Connection, Rick Windham.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. We are having a little bit of technical difficulties this morning, being able to get a hold of my guest, which, if we can pull this off, is going to be Jeff Rollinson with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission, and we're going to be talking about turkey season that's coming up real quick. The spring turkey season, particularly archery, is just right around the corner. Now, as always, Outdoor Connection is brought to you by the Minnow Bucket. The Minnow Bucket is the place for all your hunting and fishing needs. And go in there and check out the new line of fishing glasses that he's just brought in. So it'd be fun to watch. We're going to take a commercial break or two and see if we can get Mr. Rollinson back on the line, and we'll be right back.
Back to the Outdoor Connection with Rick Windham, brought to you by the Minnow Bucket. For every hunting excursion, gear up at 1013 South Jeffers in North Platte.
Welcome back, everybody. We finally located Mr. Jeff Rollinson with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. He's out on the trail somewhere this morning. How you doing, bud?
Doing well. Well, Rick, how you doing, bud?
Oh, man, it's a good time of year, you know, getting ready for turkey season. I was out going down the road just the other day and saw my first big group of turkeys out in the field, and several of the toms were in full strut, and, you know, it's all I can do from jumping out of the car and chasing them down.
It does get the blood kind of going when you see those toms starting to strut and you start hearing those gobbles here in March, and it's a prelude to what is to come.
Well, first we ought to get the particulars out as what are you eating in the youth shotgun and regular shotgun. What's the dates we're looking at?
Sure. Well, so archery in Nebraska starts March 25th, and that season will run, of course, archery will run to the end of the entire season, the end of May. Now, the youth turkey season will start April 10th, and that'll be the first weekend that any turkey could be pursued with a shotgun. And then April 17th this year will be the statewide opener of the shotgun season, which all three will run through the end of May.
Turkey hunting in Nebraska has got some pretty unique features associated with it. Number one, it's a very long season, but there's no age restriction, so that, you know, it's a great time to take kids or newbies out hunting. And then I don't know how to describe it. It's just a fun time in the field.
Well, it really is. And of course, you know, Nebraska, we tout ourselves as being the turkey hunting destination here in the United States, and that's for good reason. We've got a ton of turkeys across the state of Nebraska. Our populations are still very high. You can find turkeys all across the state of Nebraska. Access to turkeys is very good with hundreds of thousands of acres of public access, as well as, you know, private access for turkey hunting is just outstanding here in Nebraska. Permits over the counter, you can get 3 permits in a spring season, and youth permits are $8. So, you know, we just got a lot going for us, and our harvest rate is high, and you know, we're pretty proud of it. We've become the turkey destination, and it isn't slowing down. And I always tell people, if you haven't started turkey hunting yet, you've always sat on the fence, and most research will tell you that people are, you know, have been thinking about hunting for several years before they actually do it. And like you said, turkey hunting is probably one of the more easy sports to get into. And especially for youth, it's a great opportunity to introduce kids to the field where you're sitting at the base of a tree or in a ground blind, relaxing, having fun, talking, telling stories, sharing memories, really, and all of a sudden that's interrupted by a thunderous gobble. That tom makes his way into the field and everything just comes to a standstill. Not as cool as it gets, really.
It is. It is. The older I get and the deeper I get into my hunting career, if I can call it and bring it to me, I am more interested in hunting that way than pass shooting or just, you know, whatever. And
oh, absolutely.
Turkeys give you all of that.
That comes with with skill level. And it's not just going out and hunting. I want to master a skill and bring that critter, compete with that critter on his own terms, and bring him into me. And there's few things that'll make you pumped up and feel as good as doing that.
Now, we just mentioned calling him in. What is your favorite call?
You know, I'm a mouth call guy. I've always been a mouth call guy. It's just so hands free and simple. But I always tell people, for beginners, the box call is the way to go.
Absolutely.
It's just a musical instrument that plays so many notes of the wild turkey. It's the way to go. But buy that mouth call, throw it in your vehicle, and then sit there and play with it as you're driving down the road, because it requires no thought or hands whatsoever, and master it. Because once you get that mouth call mastered, you're going to love it.
And especially if you're a bow hunter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know how many times I've been at full draw, still.
Oh, yeah.
And, talking that turkey in the next few feet at full draw, you couldn't do that with any other call.
And I've even done that with a shotgun. You know, at the last second, that turkey may drift behind some vegetation or something, and I'm on point, on aim, and, you know, a couple more little purrs to see him get that gobbler to come out and give me a free shot, and I'm ready to go.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I'd say most birds that I've harvested with a shotgun, the last thing they ever hear is a... And, boy, that pops their head right up when they hear that.
Yep.
And there's my target. And there's the target. And it just makes it so much easier to pick out that target.
The other thing you just mentioned was, you know, getting, you know, you're there, you're with your hunting buddies, and the stories that are, and, you know, as I've done hunting, it's the camaraderie and being with everybody in the field that is probably more important than actually pulling the trigger or releasing the arrow, to me.
Yeah, well, you know, you're one of those guys that's just come full circle, and that's, you know, that stage of the sportsman where, you know, for us, it's just, yeah, you know, I look more forward. I'm like you, and I've been at campfires with you. You're more into the campfire and the camp coffee and the food and the cooking and all that sometimes, I think, than the hunt, because that's truly where the camaraderie and the memories and the fun is at.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm with you. When I think of turkey camp, I'm thinking of food and campfires and friends around the campfires at night talking about what they saw or didn't see. And you know, very few of those memories are just a Tom strutting out in the field. That's part of it, but it's not the excitement for me. I agree with you. I look forward to that camp out with the friends and family every year.
One of the stories that I get admonished for every now and then, this has been about 10 years ago, but we were in camp, you know, a cabin, and had done breakfast and stuff, and I'm generally the cook, so had got it all done. Everybody was out in the field, and I was late. I was probably 45 minutes to an hour late to get out in the field. And I got out, waded across the river, got onto the island where I wanted to be, sent out my first set of calls, and had an immediate response. And I sat down and kept calling and had a big Tom walk right into me, and I got him. And I'm walking back across the river. I was out there maybe 30 minutes. And I'm walking back across the river, and other buddies from where they were sitting in their blind, they could look down the river and see me crossing, and my cell phone goes off, and there's this voice on the other end. He says, you know, that's just disgusting.
You know, some seasons are like that, though. They can be really quick.
I had an old turkey hunter tell me one time, he says, you can be lucky or you can be good, and lucky is better.
Amen. Amen. No question about it.
In the box calls you were talking about, that I agree with you. I think for a beginner, that is the best choice. Learn that box call, and it's going to carry you a long way. And most people want to graduate up naturally. They'll move to the stick and slate. They'll move up into the mouth call, which I'm told that maybe only 15% of the people, turkey hunters out there, ever master a mouth call. That's just, for whatever reason, that's the toughest one to do.
It really is, and of course, once you master it, you go, oh yeah, that wasn't that difficult at all. But when we do some of our calling clinics, calling workshops, you know, people, that's the one they struggle with, that, and then the slate. The slate's kind of the next one, is in terms of ease of use, and then of course, you know, the box call and the push button calls. Those are kind of the easiest ones. The box call can be as technical as you want it to be or as easy as you want it to be. I mean, anybody can make notes on a box call right out of the box.
Right.
But then I've seen some guys and gals that are just incredible with a box call. And again, it's a musical instrument, and, you know, some people are better than others, but, and just make some incredible notes, which, man, you couldn't tell the difference. So that's pretty cool. But, the mouth call to me, you can make just about every sound. The gobble's very difficult, but outside the gobble, just about every sound, a turkey's going to make with the mouth call.
The box call is the only one that I can have mastered the gobble with. And I put the rubber band on it and hang it upside down and shake it, and I can get a pretty good gobble sound out of that.
Yeah. And again, it's kind of like what you said, like a rubber band, some sort of a friction. And some people have to kind of play with that, a tighter rubber band, you know, versus a looser rubber band to get that really good kind of gobble. And man, that can be a call, especially if you're on private ground, you're all alone out there and you let off a gobble, and all of a sudden that tom that wasn't responding to that hen all of a sudden just thunders back with a gobble because he doesn't want that other gobbler. He's mad there's another gobbler in his area, and the fight is on. So that could be a good one.
Another thing I do is I always carry multiple calls with me because I believe turkeys can recognize other turkeys by voice just like we can between people. I've number of times I've had that tom coming in and I'm talking to him and he's answering and then all of a sudden he shuts up and he will not give me another sound. I still haven't pinpointed where he is, but I'll switch calls and make another one and he'll come back like, hey, where'd that guy come from? I'm coming in looking for you.
You know, and that's a very good trick. I always tell people say, how many calls should you have? And I said, no less than 1,000. But a very good trick is to have at least 3 or 4 calls with you like that so that, yeah, you can go to I like two-sided box calls because each side is different. So you can mimic more than one hen in a flock just with a box call by itself. And it's not unusual for me to have a box call going and my mouth call going at the same time. And most people know me, it's not unusual for my mouth to be going anyway, but to have the mouth call and the box call together, you can mimic a couple of hens fighting, you can mimic hens just kind of purring and clucking as they're feeding through the field. All things that is more real a lot of times to a tom than just that monotone one sound all morning long from the same spot.
Exactly. Now we're, like I said, the 25th is the first season we open up with, the archery season.
Yep.
Right now is the time we need to be out there doing our scouting. What tips do you have for that?
Well, and it is. You're exactly right. My first tip is if you're hunting private land, talk to landowners and find out where they're at. Turkeys are bunched up still this time of year and slowly starting to break up. You're starting to see, maybe some individual birds here and there, but for the most part, you're seeing 5 or 6, 7 toms, 8 toms, 12 toms together, a bunch of hens together and whatnot. So landowners can tell you where they're bunching up. They can tell you where they see them strutting occasionally, because a lot of times strutting areas, dusting areas, they're not too different from year to year. And so landowners are some of your best information, especially as we get into late March, early April, just listening in the mornings to where those birds are gobbling, listening to those birds going to the roost. A lot of times they let off a lot of gobbles when they're heading to the roost, letting every hen know that, hey, I'll be here in the morning. And so therefore, that's a good place to start. Then getting out, and if you know where the roost site is, you've got half the battle won. But then getting out and looking for, tracks, scat signs, you can get an idea where birds are walking to and from. They're going to leave the roost tree, and they're going to go to feed somewhere. Now, as the season wears on, they're going to leave the roost tree and spend nothing but time around hens. The hens will be feeding, and but this transitional period right now, it's roost tree and then feeding. So knowing where they transition from the roost tree to feeding areas is key. You need to sit in a spot kind of in between that area and then get them to come in with a call the next few yards to make the shot. But once we get into the breeding season, then it becomes more of a different game. Now we're talking to the toms, trying to coax them in, or talking to those hens, trying to bring those hens in, and toms will follow.
I tell people that if you get out and you do your scouting, you'll find out that turkeys can be very pressuring in activities. They're going to come out of their roosts. They're going to go the same way every morning, and you can almost set your clock by it. You're probably within 10 minutes each day of where they're going to be. So if you just spend a little time out there, you can be successful with it. It's not an impossibility to go get a tom turkey.
No. You're exactly right, and I tell people that all the time, that once you pattern a bird, and that'll change as the breeding season changes, but depending on what phase of that breeding season you're in, once you pattern a bird, you probably got a few days of them just being, just like you said, clockwork on that same pattern until the breeding starts, and then things can kind of change pretty rapidly. But that's why, you know, a lot of our bow hunters like this early season, because we get out there March 25th, you know, April 1st, what have you, you know, patterning those birds is the key during that early archery season.
Yep. Speaking of archery, what's your favorite setup for turkey hunting?
In terms of a bow, or
the bow, the arrow, the broadhead, whatever you use.
You know, I'm a Rage fan, and I use Rage broadheads. I like anything that'll open up to at least 2 inches or greater in diameter. And you know, the bigger the better, as far as I'm concerned. But I like expandables, but I like a quarter. You know, some of those even 2.5. Those are perfect in my opinion. I have hunted with blunts many times, and I'm a big fan of blunts. You know, headshots with blunts, but I've just kind of gravitated toward those Rage broadheads. Like to hunt from a ground blind. One of the things a person learns fast in a ground blind with a bow and arrow is that if you're just choosing a ground blind, think vertical windows, not horizontal.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're going to have your little X-wing fighter holes going through your blind.
And you're always going to be in this contortionist mode inside the blind, trying to get low enough or right or left enough to get a shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Vertical windows are key for bow hunters. You know, horizontal windows are great for shotgunners, but for bow hunters, those blinds with vertical windows that you can make vertical are pretty darn key.
When you mentioned the expandable, you know, the mechanical broadheads that open up like that, you know, you have to have a bow that's fast enough to do that, usually around 275 foot per second or greater, and that usually mm-hmm. limits you to a compound. Well, I'm at the other end of the spectrum. I'm a stick bow shooter. So I generally have to just use a fixed type blade. But
sure.
it can be done. I mean, it was done for millennia before us.
Now, what do you like to use for a fixed blade?
A Savoy, or if I still have some of the old Bear razors.
Oh, my. Old school.
Old school.
But they work.
I need to send you a picture. It's probably my favorite bow hunt I ever did. Not only was it, you know, just a regular arrow with an old Bear razor on it, but the bow itself was very unique. I had a replica of a Mongolian horse bow.
Oh, wow.
Double recurve. I'll send you that picture.
Yeah, I'd like to have that.
But that was a fun hunt, and just, you know, I'm hunting with equipment that's thousands of years old. That was pretty
good.
You know,
and it feels good to kind of step back in time. That's one of the beauties of hunting, is you can kind of slow things down, step back in time, and master something that, you know, few people can master. When it comes to us bow hunters, you know, a very small percentage of the population will ever go out and harvest a turkey with a bow. No easy feat.
No.
You step back even further and go to a recurve, a longbow or something, and now you're in a very small percentage of people who will ever master, you know, all kinds of levels in life. It feels pretty good to master something at that level, have the skill to be able to do that.
Yeah, just like the story I just told. You know, I've $1,000 compound bows and all like that, peep sights. But the one that I really remember is the one with the old Mongolian horse bow. That was a fun one. And he was walking through a stand of sumac. And I still remember that, all those little trees, and had to wait and get a shot like that. Let's switch over to shotguns. What's your favorite setup with a shotgun?
Oh, I like a short-barreled shotgun, you know, 24-inch barreled shotgun. With a 3-inch mag shooting fives, and I'm a big proponent of five shot. It's just been a really good turkey getter for me.
So am I.
I like 3-inch mags, but 2 3/4 can work just fine too. It doesn't take much special for turkeys, but the five shot, perfect. You know, some of the heavy shot and tungsten, iron, nickel, those kind of shots that are out on the market now. Yes, there's no question. They can hit pretty hard, and they can slam turkeys pretty good because of the makeup of the alloy and the weight of the BBs and whatnot. So, you know, you kind of get what you pay for, but, you know, some standard turkey loads has worked well for a lot of people and continues to do so.
Five shot has been on a couple of my shotguns, and I've got a couple old shotguns that the old long tom versions, single shot like that. I've got one. It's a solid rib trap gun that was made around 1915, and it will reach out there. And buffered number five shot works well in it. At the other end of the spectrum, I have got a nice pump gun, you know, with all the modern Picatinny rails, optics, everything, changeable chokes, and I am working to the capability of taking a bird at 100. And
oh my!
Right now, I'm out to 79 yards with what I've done with that shotgun.
Wow!
But it's
getting out there for me. But I know that technology today, with the shells, the choke tubes, the guns we have, it certainly has given us some extended range compared to 50 years ago. No question about that.
And that's the key. You have to work it. You have to experiment until you find the exact right combination.
And for me, the choke tube is probably one of the most important factors. You know, I used to just hunt with whatever, choke tube I had with the gun, and that was fine. But over the last 15 years or so, I've really experimented with a number of different screw-in choke tubes, like the old extended choke tubes, and I've come to a conclusion that some of those extended ported-type choke tubes that separate the wad from the shot just give incredible patterns, and so that's kind of where I've settled on. And I can tell you right now, they do a number on turkeys out to pretty good ranges.
Oh, yeah. And not only in 12-gauge. I mean, people often ask me, they said, what do you recommend for gauges? And I said, whatever you like to shoot is basically it. I've killed turkeys with 10 gauges. I've killed them with 410s, and they're all just as dead. you just got to know.
It's funny because when you call a turkey into 10 yards and they're dancing around the decoy out front of you, what you're shooting it with at that point probably matters very little.
Yeah.
Because at 10 or 12, 15 yards, it just doesn't matter. As long as you're on with headshot, it ain't going to matter.
Exactly.
But, it's those run-and-gun type hunters now, when you get out there 25, 35, now things start to change a little bit with, what you're shooting and the load and the choke tubes and whatnot. But calling them right up to the blind, it takes a lot of the variables out when they're dancing out there and fighting at 10 yards.
You mentioned decoys. What's your philosophy on decoys? How do you use them?
Well, I tell you, I really think there's a science when it comes to decoys, and I've really gotten into that science over the last several years. And I'm a firm believer. You don't just throw a decoy out. It's a little more intricate than that. The decoy manufacturers have started making decoys that mimic the right postures and positions. I am a huge fan of a submissive Jake decoy. And submissive doesn't mean that he's not being ornery. And I like those kind of like almost quarter strut or half strut Jake decoys that they're trying to strut a little bit because they're being a little bit ornery, but they know that they're not the top dog, so they don't portray themselves as being something that a tom doesn't want to fight. And that can bring those toms in, and it also brings the hens in. There's something about that submissive Jake decoy in half strut or quarter strut. They bring the hens come in, and they always go to him for me, and they pick his head. They just pick at his head and at his eyes unmercifully.
Yep.
And so I've killed a lot of toms with hens coming into that decoy and toms following them. I always use hens. I generally will have hens as well, but I can tell you right now, if there's one decoy I'm going to have with me, it's that submissive Jake.
One thing that I'll do, particularly with new hunters, is I will take and use, and I hunt with multiple decoys, usually six or eight out there in front of me somewhere. But I will use some of them as range markers.
So that
new hunter knows that once a turkey comes beyond that decoy, you can take it. And I think that's a big help for them. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for bow hunting, I put them out there at 10 yards for me. Shotgunning, I'll put them out there at 15 yards for me. And that way I know exactly where they're at based on the decoy. Even today, it still helps.
Right.
But it's important where you face the decoy. At that tom, I've noticed I've had hens that would be facing out into the field. Wind would blow them around, and that tom would come out in that field and see that hen staring at him, and he would lock up out there in the field 100 yards away, 200 yards away, and just sit there and strut and gobble all morning long because he knows that hen can see him, So there's no noose, or she'll come to me, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's supposed to happen in nature. So don't give the tom any more help than he already has. In nature, the tom doesn't come to the hen. The hen comes to the tom. He gobbles, and she comes to find him. So, and he's there strutting, and then she comes in. So I always like to have the hen decoy facing toward me or away from where the tom comes in, and that always seems to drive them a little closer to the decoy. But with Jake's, I like to have them facing either toward where the tom I think is going to come from, or at least out in that direction, because when he makes eye contact with that Jake and that Jake doesn't back down, that really ticks him off, and that a lot of times brings that tom running up to that Jake just because that Jake isn't backing down.
We're going to have to do a show one time just on the philosophy and use of turkey decoys.
Oh, we could so easily do that.
But right now I hear music in the background, which is Tristan's way of telling me that we've run out of time, partner.
All right. I've enjoyed it.
You bet. Thanks again. It's been a while since you've been on. Enjoyed having you.
It has. We'll have to cut that time in half.
All right. That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.